Thank you all for being here. And we took a two-week break. Seemed like longer than that. But so we're picking up with lesson three. This is a study that was put together by Wendell Winkler. And so all of this material is just following some stuff that he put together several years ago. And so even today, as we talk about the current leadership styles, this is not David's thoughts on it and or anything. It's simply taking his material and putting it to an outline form. And so but I think it's interesting as I've looked at his material how timeless it is. The things that he wrote about leadership, some of them were written 30, 40 years ago. This particular stuff was put together maybe 20 years ago. But how timeless it is, that the principles that involve the kind of leadership that God wants in the church, those haven't changed. And it's interesting even looking at some of these leadership styles that he writes about, that many of them are still very current in the kind of thought process that individuals have. And so what we're going to do in this lesson is divide this up into looking at what he calls the negative leadership styles, which are obviously the ones that are not ones that we want to emulate. And then the last part of it, we'll look at some positive leadership styles. And obviously, there's things that we can learn from both sets of that. You know, when you look even at leaders that are not good leaders, you still learn something from them. Maybe you learn things about how you don't want to do certain things. You know, when I look at other preachers, sometimes I learn how I don't want to preach, or how I don't want to treat other people. Oh, that's how he talks to people. Well, yeah, that's not how I want to talk to people. So, I mean, I think you can learn from both the positive and the negative, and make application from that. So, I think he's got about eight different negative styled leaders. The first one is what he calls the passive figurehead leader. Think about these as we go through them. Interesting, you know, if you were to say, okay, this is the kind of the words that I would use to describe a particular. So this is a passive figurehead leader. Does that sound like a good thing? Is that just the word passive in leader? That's almost that almost doesn't fit together. To talk about that. So the way Brother Winkler describes this person is usually a very good man morally. So nothing wrong with him. He's a stand-up man, probably even would meet the qualifications that you find in Scripture, but he's not much of a leader. And folks would not necessarily recognize him as a leader. He's designated as somebody who he's not somebody who comes up with his own ideas. He usually will just kind of go along with what others say. He lets others do kind of the planning and the initiating, and then he just says, okay, that's okay with me. But he's kind of in the background as a passive follower in these cases. And he says that one of the reasons that he suggests this is that sometimes these leaders are motivated by fear. Why are they passive? Why are they individuals who are not coming up with ideas? Well, maybe they're afraid to. Maybe they're afraid of what people will think, how people will react. Maybe they're afraid of criticism. Is that a good way to lead? If out of fear of what other people may. Now, nothing wrong with being concerned about. Nothing wrong with having thoughts. Okay, how are people going to respond to this? How are people going to react? But if that is the sole determining factor, you think about, you know, Brenda being a teacher, Beth being a teacher, you know, if you constantly, well, how are the kids going to respond to this? If you ever thought the kids wouldn't like something, well, I guess we won't do this. I don't think the kids will go for that. You know, it's like, well, no, you've got to make a decision, and this is what's best for this group, and this is what we're going to go with. But so he's letter D. He's content with the status quo. He's okay with just going along with how things are. The old idea of if it's not broken, don't fix it. So What do you think of that kind of leader? Passive figurehead leader. Is he effective? No, not really. Now, you know, as you think about it, sometimes are some leaders sometimes stronger than other leaders, naturally. You know, some individuals are more of a natural leader. There's nothing, and he's not talking about somebody who's quiet or somebody who's not as aggressive as others or not as dominant as others, but just talking about somebody who's not really leading. They've got a title of being a leader, but is not really leading. And he would say that's not being a strong leader. The second category he's got is what he calls the reactionary leader. Think about that title, the reaction. What kind of leader is this? The reactionary leader. He's just somebody that kind of reacts to things. I think it's interesting what he says in letter A. He spends his time listening to critics and then responding accordingly. When I read that, I thought about Moses. Did Moses have any critics in his efforts in leading the Israelites? I think that's all he had. Was there any other individual among the Israelites? Even his own brother and sister turned against him. Who does he have left? Think about Moses. Was he the kind of leader that he listened to the critics, said, okay, well, they don't want this, so, you know, they don't want to go to the promised land, we'll just stay here. They don't, you know, they want us to turn back, okay, we'll turn back. Think about how much criticism he dealt with. Now, do leaders in the church, do elders in the church, do they receive criticism? Unfortunately, they do. You know 1 Timothy chapter 5, right? At least this particular passage in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 19, it says this to Timothy. So this is a preacher saying this to another preacher, but it has application to every Christian, and it would have applications to elders too, where he says in 1 Timothy 5, verse 19, do not receive an accusation against an elder except at the mouth of two or three witnesses. Is that interesting? Have elders ever become the subject of criticism? Anybody ever gone to somebody else? Can you believe the elders did this? Can you believe the elders decided this? And what does this passage say? Don't receive it. Don't accept it. So what if I'm an elder and I'm on the receiving end of criticism? Consider the source. Is it one person on a gripe fest that is a habitual complainer? That's their MO? Okay, well then recognize that. Is it different if it's two or three that are coming and saying, here's something that ought to be considered? Well, God says it's different if it's two or three. But if it's somebody that's just a complainer, somebody that's just a regular critic, God says, don't receive them. And that goes for all of us. You know, if somebody comes to us to criticize the elders, we don't need to receive them. And so this kind of leader, he says, is focused on crisis management. That he's looking for a crisis so that he can manage it and solve the crisis. But if that's the kind of leader that somebody is, then they're not helping the church, he says, to move forward. They don't have the strength, the time, the energy, the interest, or the resources left in their efforts to positively move the church forward. Now, I think as we go through here, there are parts of each of these leaders that are not necessarily bad, that are not, you know, being somebody who is responding to critics, that is managing crisis. Is that a bad thing? Well, no. Okay. But what his point is that's the whole focus of this kind of leader. That's where his mindset is. Obviously, do elders need to be involved in problem solving? Well, yeah, that's kind of in the job description. But the point here with him, with what Brother Winkler is saying, is that the focus does not need to be entirely on, okay, people don't think we should do this, people don't like this, people are not. It is A leader needs to get out and lead in a direction that he knows to be right and be for the good of the church. Page 15. I know you've probably got lots of thoughts, and I'm going to ask for some of those thoughts in a little bit. And you can interject them. If you just can't hold them, you can interject them. That's okay, too. Because, you know, as I, well, I'll save that thought for a minute. Number three, he talks about a dictatorial leader. That sounds like a good elder quality, right? A dictatorial leader. Now, do elders have you might think this is a trick question. Do elders have authority? Yes, they do. All right. We're not talking about the all authority that Jesus has in Matthew chapter 28, but do elders have authority? We're going to note in a little bit that they're not only called elders and they're not only called shepherds, but they're also called overseers. That's one of their titles. The term overseer inherently involves authority. You can't be an overseer if you don't have any authority. The superintendent, that word overseer has the idea of superintendency in it. So the superintendent at school, the superintendent down at the factory, the superintendent wherever, do they have authority? Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of the task. It's part of the job. But sometimes can authority be misunderstood, even by the individual who has the authority. Brother Winkler said, this kind of leader, again, not wrong for an eldership to have authority. And by the way, let me back up to this. Does an eldership have authority? Yes. Does an elder, singular, have authority? Sorry? As a group, there's authority. Now, does that mean that, oh, well, I only need to respect the eldership. I don't need to respect an elder. Well, no, that's not what that's talking about. But where is the authority that's involved? And I'm getting ahead to even the next one here. But just think about that. Where does the authority lie? In overseeing the affairs of the church, it's in the eldership. I watched one video, and I understand. I don't know about you all. I'm thankful for the elders that we have 100% of the time, and then especially during COVID. So 100% of the time, all the time. But especially during COVID, was I thankful for the elders that we have. Because I looked at some other congregations, I was like, oh boy, I'm glad I don't have those elders. I'm glad that we have the elders that we had. But I watched one video from an eldership that was during COVID, and I understand those were unprecedented times and trying to figure out what to do during those times. But there was one elder, and he just came across in this video. They had put it online. They were kind of sitting in one of their kitchens. Probably shouldn't tell you too much detail. Maybe you saw it too. But the one elder said, the comment was, this is what you need to do. You know, when you come to the building and something, you know, we're going to do it this way. And just please do this because we're telling you to do this. And it was even more direct. It was like, we're the elders. We're telling you to do this. So just do it this way. Okay, I know you have the authority, no question. But it came across, and understand, COVID was challenging times, for sure. But it just came across kind of in this kind of dictatorial, kind of just do what I say because I'm saying to do it. And so, letter C, his leadership is exercised through intimidation. I want you to go back in your mind. Do we have time? I want you to go back in your Bible. Go to 1 Kings chapter 12. This isn't on the handout. But as I was reading through these notes this afternoon to get ready, I thought of 1 Kings chapter 12. Solomon dies, 1 Kings chapter 11. So when Solomon, the king of the United Kingdom, dies, what eventually happens to the United Kingdom? it becomes Great Britain. No, it becomes, sorry, not that United Kingdom. It becomes the divided kingdom, just seeing if you're paying attention. And so you've got Rehoboam who comes on the scene, and Rehoboam is going to assume the kingship. That's what he is anticipating doing. And you remember about Rehoboam that as he comes in, he's like, you know, I need to figure out how to be king and what I need to do, as the king. And so, Jeroboam comes to meet with him. You know Jeroboam and Rehoboam, right? They're not brothers. They're not twins, but it's fun to think about that. So Jeroboam comes to meet with him, for the people. And Jeroboam tells him in verse 4, your father made our yoke heavy. You're now the king. Your father was rough on us. What are you going to do? And basically in 1 Kings chapter 12 and verse 4, 1 Kings chapter 12 verse 4, he says, look, if you'll lighten the burden, if you won't be so heavy on us, we're going to serve you. You've got our support. And so Rehoboam said, okay, go away for 3 days and then come back and we'll talk. So Rehoboam goes away from Jeroboam's meeting and he goes and he calls the elders, the older men, and he asks them for advice. And they tell him, you need to let up, buddy. You need to back off. And if you'll back off, these people will serve you. What did he do in verse 8 to that sound advice? Rejected the advice which the elders had given. No, that's not me. So then he goes to his peers. He goes to the young men, verse 10. And the young men who had grown up with him, so he goes to his friends, right? And says, hey, what do you think? What kind of king do you think I should? Well, what do you think your friends are going to say? Hey, this is a great opportunity. Man, we can rule the world here. And so you need to tell them, the end of verse 10, he says, they tell him, you need to tell them, my little finger's going to be thicker than my father's waist. And now, whereas my father put a heavy yoke on you, I will add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, and I'm going to chastise you with scourges. If you thought you had it bad then, you don't know what's coming. So Jeroboam comes back after 3 days in verse 12. And Rehoboam conveys this information, the decision that he has made to him. Look in verse 15. The king did not listen to the people. What an interesting statement. The king did not listen to the people. For the turn of events was from the Lord, that he shall fulfill his word, which the Lord had spoken by Ahijah the Shilonite, to Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. Now when all Israel saw the king did not listen to them, people answered the king and said, what share have we in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Now see to your own house, O David. So Israel departed to their tents. What happened? Rehoboam's going to be a dictator. He's going to say it's going to be my way, and if you don't like it, that's tough. Verse 19 says, so Israel has been in rebellion against the house of David to this day. Israel was never the same after Rehoboam's fit for authority. You'll note on page 15, what Brother Winkler says when he says that this kind of leader has little time for others' input. That's Rehoboam. He's not interested in other people's input. He has little time for other people's input and a consideration thereof. His verbal communication, personal demeanor are authoritarian. Now, hold your finger in 1 Kings 12 because I want to come back here in just a minute, but go all the way to the end of your New Testament, to 3 John. Go to 3 John, little book maybe we don't study very often. But what Brother Winkler noted about a dictatorial leader is that he is Diotrephian, right? Can you spell that without looking? he is Diotrephian. Well, where in the world does that come from? Well, it comes from 3 John. And so in 3 John verse 9, John says, I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence among them, he does not receive us. Here is a man who is, it's all about him. Therefore, if I come, I will call to mind his deeds, which he does, prating against us with malicious words. And not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren, forbids those who wish to, putting them out of the church. He says, don't imitate that kind of person. But was Diotrephes a leader in the church? He was. What kind of leader was he? Well, he's this, he's this dictatorial leader. And where does that lead? The letter E on there leads to frustration among the members, and it leads to division. What happened in Israel because of Rehoboam? Once a united kingdom, why did it become the divided kingdom? Because of Rehoboam. Because of a man that wouldn't listen to the people and put his foot down and said, nope, my finger's going to be thicker than my father's waist. So, interesting concepts to look at here. Does the eldership have authority? Yes. Does the eldership have authority to lead the church? Are we to, for Hebrews chapter 13, verse 17, obey them who have the rule over you, submit yourselves to them? Every bit of that. So I am not discounting any. Please don't misunderstand anything I'm saying. And please underscore, highlight, put a star next to everything I've said. I'm not talking about our elders here, okay? I don't have anything in mind. I said 100%, and so this is not David's material. This is just Brother Winkler's material, but it's just warnings about the kind of leaders that can come into the church. So this isn't David talking to our elders here, okay? It's interesting to see that this can be the kind of man who can step in. Number four. I'm going to have to move through some of these a little quicker, I guess. The presumptive leader. What's the presumptive leader? He makes decisions on his own. And then he reports to the eldership. So this goes back to, where does the authority lie? The authority is within the eldership. Now, this isn't to say that an elder can't give direction, or an elder can't communicate something to individuals. I find it interesting over the years how members have come to an elder. Well, I went to an elder, but he wouldn't tell me anything. Well, yeah, okay. I went to an elder, but he said he had to go ask the elders. I don't understand that. Well, it's because there's an eldership. That doesn't mean that elders don't sometimes communicate things on their own and then go back to the eldership and say, okay, here's what you need to know. Here's what's happening. But members need to recognize that if they go ask an elder something, that there may be many occasions where that elder doesn't give them an answer right off. Because that man sees, well, this needs to go back to the eldership. Now, if it's about, what kind of ice cream should we be bringing tonight, homemade or store bought, if you ask Richard that, he's going to give you a one man rule answer. He doesn't have to go back to the eldership and ask him. Homemade banana. See, I mean, he's got the answer. So that's another kind of leader. Number five, page 16. The micromanager leader. This kind of leader needs his finger. He needs to have his finger on every detail. He either misunderstands his role, or perhaps Brother Winkler says he's insecure. He takes offense at anyone moving forward without his permission, without his prior approval. This kind of leader has difficulty delegating. Remember when we talked about Moses and how Jethro came along and told, his father-in-law came along and told him, you need to delegate? This kind of leader couldn't be Moses because he really can't delegate and then trust the person that's been delegated to. Notice what he says about if we don't delegate, it robs people of opportunities to serve if we don't delegate opportunities to them. It destroys the confidence and motivation of those who are trying to serve. It convinces himself he is doing his job because he's always busy. He says busy work and leadership are not necessarily the same thing. And what he says about micromanagers is that they leave themselves little time for shepherding. They're involved in so many other minute details that are going on, and they have to know everything that's happening, that they don't necessarily give themselves to shepherding the people, and that can be a dangerous consequence of this kind of leadership style. I know there's a lot of blanks on that one. I want to get to the positive leaders, and I'm spending too much time on the negative leaders. So I'm going to let you get those blanks filled in, and then we're going to go on to the next one. We got those, most of them. Number six is the reluctant leader. The reluctant leader is overcautious, fearful, and slow to act. He has difficulty making decisions. He always second guesses things. He likes to delay as much as possible. Brother Winkler says he always wants to study the matter further, without ultimately and finally making a decision. But he says ultimately he's just going to go along with the others, and whatever decision is made. But, he's kind of reluctant to make decisions. You know, decisions are hard to make, especially when they're not popular, especially when they may not be received well. Do elders ever have to make decisions that may not be received well by the whole congregation? Yeah, they do. But with much prayer, saturating those decisions with prayer and Bible study, those decisions still have to be made. Think about Nehemiah. Did Nehemiah face difficulties in leading the people and rebuilding the walls? Yeah, all the time. What if he had been a reluctant leader that just said, oh, you know what? I'm just not sure how we're going to proceed. Those walls would not have been built in 52 days if Nehemiah was a reluctant leader. Page 17, number 7, the extremist leader. What a name, right? The extremist leader. And I'm just going to put all of these up here. Let me see. Yep, that's all of them. The extremist leader, who's this? He can be extreme in the positions that he takes. Sometimes he binds where God does not bind. Makes laws where God has not made laws. That's interesting. But he goes to extremes. Did the Pharisees ever do that? The Pharisees ever go too far and kind of make laws where God had not made laws? And in theory, to do it to help people to obey the law. We don't want to break the law, so we're going to make these laws so that you don't break God's law. And that's sort of the discussion here, because looking that he strains at the gnats and he swallows the camels. That's Jesus talking to Matthew 23 to the Pharisees about the extremes that they go to. They tithe mint, anise, and cumin, but they leave off the weightier matters of the law. He's not concerned, Brother Winkler says, with consistency. He has difficulty finding anyone with whom he can say he's in full fellowship. He has no room for tolerance or forbearance. Forgiveness, you know, a second chance, giving somebody, going the second mile, not necessarily the strengths of this particular leader. Seeks to bind his positions on others, but he says, you'll note, that this is the way that he lives within his family, too. I find it interesting, his last statement here. He does not understand that leadership and normalcy are not antithetical. What does that mean? Do people sometimes expect the kids of the elders to be perfect? These are the elders' kids. They need to be role models for everybody else. They need to be perfect. Do they ever expect that out of preachers' kids? Preachers, they're the preachers' kids. They need to be role models for everybody else. They don't need, you know, they just need to be perfect. Do we sometimes set expectations too high? You know what preachers' kids and elders' kids are? I just used the word in both of those statements. You know what preachers' kids and elders' kids are? They're kids. They're kids. And are kids going to be kids? They're going to be kids. You know, I've known of, well, I won't get into that. I think that's his point here, is that maybe sometimes we're expecting too much and putting too much pressure there. And it may be that the man is putting too much pressure on his kids. Well, you need to do this, you need to do that, because you're an elder kid. You're an elder's kid. You're a preacher's kid after all. And, you know, sometimes kids are going to be kids. Now, you may be confused about page 18. But Brother Winkler puts this in the negative list. The decision-making leader. And you say, hang on a second. That one I'm not sure about. He conceives his role as somewhat of a CEO of a corporation. His work is over when the decisions are made. Once the meeting is done and the decision's been made, then that's been his purpose. He prefers prayers that say bless the elders and the decisions they make, rather than bless the elders and the work they do. Let me tell you what he means by that. Nothing wrong with either one of those prayers. But if the mindset is bless the elders and the decisions they make, sometimes the mindset that that comes from is all that the elders do is make decisions. All the elders do. A mindset. I'm not saying this is reality. I'm just saying a mindset sometimes people have is all the elders do is they talk and they make decisions for the church. Is that all the elders do? Just making decisions? Their role, and look down here at the designations that they have, and this is, we mentioned this a moment ago, they're called elders and presbyters. What's that involve? Age. Oops, I thought I had this up here. That involves age, experience, and wisdom. They're bishops and overseers. What's that involve? Being in charge, superintendency, and rule. They're pastors and shepherds. What does that involve? They care, they protect, and they feed. But what Brother Winkler says is these decision-making elders put the emphasis on the rule part of it, the overseeing part of it, to the neglect of the shepherding part of it. And I appreciate that that when I've heard one of our elders, Richard, talk about the work of elders, he has noted that, you know, when God talks about the role of elders, the verb that he uses, the verb, the action term that is used in Scripture to talk about elders is the word shepherd. That's their work. Do they make decisions? Yes. Do shepherds make decisions? Well, sure, shepherds make decisions. But the most important work that elders make is not what time should we unlock the doors? What time should we have them unlock the doors? You know, what time should we turn the lights off after services? You know, those are not the most important decisions elders make. The most important things that they do is shepherding the flock. And so again, I think there's parts of a lot of these leaders that are not bad. But his point in putting them on the negative list is to say, if this is their sole focus, then they're missing the true purpose. All right. That's a lot of, and I'm going to get into the positive ones here in just a second. That's a lot of stuff to take in. You may not agree with some of the stuff we've talked about so far. Anybody got any thoughts or comments about the negative leadership styles? Those aren't fun to talk about because you're trying to think, who's David thinking about when he's saying that? David's not thinking about anybody. David's just reading the paper. Johnny? They've got to meet, every man has got to meet those qualifications. And that's why God puts them in Scripture, is that it's not just to be anyone who's going to be an elder in the Lord's church. He must be somebody who meets God's standards. And then, you know, to look at himself and say, okay, as an elder, as one of the shepherds, and then to look at the shepherds as a whole, as a group, you know, to be reminded of the roles and the purposes that God's given to them. Very quickly, let's get through these positive. There's only three. I find it interesting. He puts eight on the negative and three on the positive. But again, I think you learn from the eight, as well as you learn from the three. But, positive leadership styles. The first one he mentions is the servant leader. The servant leader. Look in Luke 22. I want you to see this real quick, and I'm gonna put up all of them in case you want to multitask. Luke 22. So Luke 22, the context of Luke 22 is Jesus is in the upper room before he's going to go out, pray in the garden, be betrayed, and be crucified. So that's the context. You see in Luke 22 that he's instituted the Lord's Supper back up in verses 14 through 23 in that section. So you know this is that upper room scene. And so in verse 24 of Luke 22, while they're in this upper room, there was a dispute among them as to which of them should be considered the greatest. I just find it interesting the setting of that. They are in the upper room with Jesus at what we call the Last Supper, when Jesus takes the bread and he says, "This is my body. This is my blood." What are you talking about? I'm getting ready to die. And what are they talking about? Who's going to be the greatest? So Jesus says in verse 25, "The kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over the Gentiles. And those who exercise authority over them are called benefactors. But not so among you. That's not you. I didn't call you to exercise lordship. On the contrary, he who is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he who governs, let him be as he who serves. He says, who's greater? The one who sits at the table or the one who serves? Is it not who sits at the table? Don't we think, well, this person's sitting at the table, they're greater? No, he says, yet I am among you as one who serves. Context, John 13 just happened. What happened in John 13? Jesus washed the feet. That's happening right here. When they're arguing about who's the greatest, Jesus gets up and washes their feet. And now he says, guess what, guys? You're sitting at the table, and what am I doing? I'm serving you. And he says, who's greatest here? The one sitting at the table or the one washing the feet? Who, in God's eyes, what kind of leader is he looking for? Well, Jesus was a servant leader. He's the one who girded himself with a towel. I love what he says here. When there's a trauma, that's where you found an elder. When there's a dying brother, that's where you're going to find him. When there's a family crisis, when there's a funeral, when somebody's in the hospital, that's where you're going to find him. I love letter C. Brother Winkler knew our elders because he had been down here several times, but I don't think he put that in there because of our elders, but it matches our elders. Tim, is that true? When we have a work day here, do we ever have elders to show up? But just the younger elders, right? Tim's like, I'm not answering that question. We're not talking about age here. I'm thankful that when we have work days, guess who's here? Not just us regular underlings, the elders are here, working side by side with us, because the men who serve in this congregation are servant leaders. Number two, page 20, 3 minutes. Not just a servant leader, he's a shepherd leader. And this is what you would expect to find. Because the Bible describes elders as shepherds and pastors. What do shepherds and pastors do? What's their job? Well, do the sheep need to eat? Yep, they need to eat. So what's a shepherd's responsibility? To feed them. And take some time this week and go back and read those verses in Jeremiah and Ezekiel. You may not be familiar as those as you are in the New Testament, but there's a lot of good passages over there in the Old Testament about Old Testament shepherds, and not just literal shepherds, but even the leaders of the people that he's calling shepherds in those passages. And he says, you got to feed my people. You've got, number two, to protect. God says, you've got to protect my people. That 1 Samuel 17, do you remember what the main story that's happening in 1 Samuel 17? It's the greatest story in all of the Bible. It's about the greatest person who was ever in the Bible with the greatest name of anybody in the Bible. Am I giving you any clues as to what happens in 1 Samuel 17? You got David and Goliath in 1 Samuel chapter 17. And you got this shepherd boy who comes and defeats this giant, and everybody stands in awe that this young man came to protect God's people. He was a shepherd, not just of sheep, but of people. A shepherd leads, number three. He's not leading from behind. He's not driving like a cowboy on a horse. He's leading from the front. And that's what Jesus said in John chapter 10. Number four, shepherds know the sheep. John chapter 10, Jesus says, they call them by name. They know them. They recognize Luke 15. They recognize when one is missing. They know the sheep so well individually. They recognize when one of them is not there. And so number five, when they recognize one of them is not there, they go out and seek the lost sheep. And seek them, the Bible says there, Jesus says, until they find them. They are with the sheep. They spend time with them. And again, I love these expressions because when I think about a picture, a mental picture, a living picture of these things, I see it in our elders, that they are with the sheep. You know, there are some church leaders who operate above the front. You know, we are the elite. We don't get down and get dirty. We don't go to the work days. That's below us. They're with the sheep. And they're willing to, Jesus said in John chapter 10, they're willing to give their lives for the sheep. And you can even put Hebrews 13 verse 17 even next to that. that they're going to give an account for us. That's that. So the kind of leaders God's looking for are servant leaders, and shepherd leaders. And I hope I've given you time to get all of those blanks filled in, because I've got about 30 seconds to give you the participative. The participative, that's a fun word to say, leader. He solicits input, carefully weighs what it's received. He's willing to listen. He's not afraid to try new methods, but he's always holding to the truth. He's not going to compromise truth. And if he gets input, if he gets ideas that are not scriptural, that are not expedient to the work of the church, he's willing to go and explain why that's not going to be done. Not just not let it go by the wayside, but he's willing to go and explain why something is not adopted so that somebody can learn. Somebody can know, what the reason is so that they can grow. I know this is a lot of information here. And as I went through this, I was thinking, I'm really uncomfortable even talking about this, because people are going to think I'm talking about the elders, or the elders are going to think, oh, he's talking about us. I'm talking about the elders when I'm talking positive stuff in here. But not any of those negative qualities. Any comments, remarks, additions, subtractions, multiplications, divisions, to make? All right. Thank you all for being here. Only a minute over.